WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Whether you're listening to NPR on AM or FM, whether you're in a BMW or an SUV, or just on the MTA, there's no way to get around the modern fixation for forming words out of strings of initials. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has these thoughts on the first appearance of the word acronym 60 years ago.
TLAMs and RPGs, MREs and SSEs, EPWs and WMDs. The language we were hearing from the Iraq War had a decidedly alphabetic ring. But then, that's only appropriate. The word acronym itself was first used 60 years ago to describe military coinings like WAC, ANZAC, and RADAR, all drawn from the initials of longer phrases. By 1942, the process was familiar enough so that servicemen could make fun of it with the term SNAFU, for situation normal, all fouled up. Well, fouled is only an approximation. Of course, the American fondness for acronyms and abbreviations began well before World War II. After all, ours was the first modern nation to be known by its initials. 19th century Americans gave the language items like COD, SOB, and PDQ. And that's not to mention OK, which is certainly the most successful American contribution to the languages of the world, even if nobody's sure what the letters originally stood for. But it wasn't until the mid-20th century that acronyms became the linguistic wallpaper of modern life. One of the most successful acronyms of the 50s was VEEP, which was used affectionately for Truman's Vice President Alvin Barkley. It was largely abandoned in 1953 when Richard Nixon took over the job and made it known that he didn't like the appellation. Nixon wasn't a man to whom the phrase lighten up had a lot of meaning. But the Republican administration compensated by introducing other acronyms like RIF for reduction in force. That was the first bureaucratic euphemism for layoffs, and as it turns out, a surprisingly resilient one. Some sticklers insist that the word acronym should only be used for a string of letters that's pronounced as a word, like RIF or like NATO. Items like FBI and LSD, they call initialisms. I suppose that's a valid distinction, but most people can't be bothered with it. And anyway, it misses the main point. However they're pronounced, the crucial thing about these expressions is the way they come to live lives of their own as separate words. AC in a real estate classified is just an abbreviation for air conditioning. But ACDC is a distinct word when it's used to describe a sexual orientation. I mean, if you heard somebody's sexuality described as alternating current, direct current, your thoughts would run in a very different direction. And you may have your doubts about UFOs, but nobody denies the existence of unidentified flying objects. It's astonishing how pervasive these coinings have become over the past 60 years. I'm not thinking just of the ones that come from bureaucracy and technology. Those are mostly used for efficiency. Strings like SEC and EEG flow a lot more trippingly from the tongue than Securities and Exchange Commission and electroencephalogram. But by now, acronyms are piled up in every room in the American house. BLTs, PB&J, and OJ in the kitchen, GTOs, RVs, and SUVs in the garage, and TP in the bathroom, provided that somebody remembered to stop at the A&P. In the living room, we turn on the VCR or put on a CD by REM, ELO, or UB40. In the bedroom, we slip out of our BVDs and cop some Zs. Yuppies and WASPs, LSD and PCP, TGIF and BYOB, CBGBs and MTV, you could sketch the whole social history of the post-war period just by listing the initials it's carved on the walls. Items like these don't have much to do with a propensity for conciseness. In fact, most of them barely save any syllables over their spelled-out equivalents. The urge to acronymize goes deeper than that. It's as if we're moving toward a purely analytic language where the shape of every word reveals its meaning to the initiates who possess the secret key. In that sense, acronyms are the slang of a textual world. There's a mysterious sense of destiny to these names. The Kabbalist used the process called notaricon to form new names for God by combining the first or last letters from phrases or biblical verses. And the Tudors studded their verses with acronyms and acrostics, though probably not nearly so many as scholars have claimed to find in their efforts to prove that Shakespeare's works were written by somebody else. That's the same impulse that leads people to rig the game. They start with a plausible acronym and then contrive a description to fit it. As best I can tell, the first of these was WAVES, the name the Navy coined in 1942 for women accepted for volunteer emergency service. And in later years, the same process has given us organizational names like CARE, NOW, and MAD. Nobody's more adept at this than legislators. Over the past few years, we've had the RAVE Act for reducing Americans' vulnerability to ecstasy and Operation TIPS, the Terrorism Information and Prevention System. And then there's the Anti-Terrorism Act that goes by the name of Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism. That acronymizes as USA Patriot, a happy accident indeed.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University's Center for the Study of Language and Information, and he's the author of the book, The Way We Talk Now.